to the revolutionary first representative from Cuba, Jorge, and Comrade Teresa, friends and comrades. I would like to start the meeting by just remembering that the U.S. imperialists and the Israeli aggressors are demanding the release of two Israeli soldiers who were legitimately captured by the liberation forces when they got five prisoners over here that we got to get out of jail. Those are the prisoners who should be released. And I also want to start by solidarizing ourselves with Hezbollah, with Hamas, in their struggle against imperialism. The capitalist media, the news networks, are in this awkward, excruciating position. See, they have to be all over in order to get ratings. So they're all in Lebanon, they're in Beirut, they're in the south, they're up on, and so they have to show the pictures of the devastated neighborhoods, of the people running from the bombs, of the children sleeping on boards, and of people having no food and no electricity and no water and being displaced. And at the same time, they have to say, well, this is self-defense. That's a tough position to put over. Everybody can see what's going on, but they don't even show the real stuff. They don't show where the Israelis bomb cars that are moving, where they go to a village and they say, everybody out. And then people start to move out and they bomb them on the roads and burn them alive. They don't show that. They don't show the real atrocities that are taking place. They want to make it equal, so they show some Israelis in a bomb shelter in Haifa who ran from a few missiles instead of showing what's really happening in Lebanon. And there's an endless discussion of the weapons of Hezbollah. Where they came from. They came from Iran. Oh yes, and it was made in China, but the Iranians adapted it and they sent it through Syria. And they have this missile and it goes so many kilometers, and that missile and it goes. They don't say, well, let's discuss the Abrams tanks, the Apache helicopters, the satellite communication that imperialism gives to the Israeli army so that they can position their weapons. The Israelis don't have satellites. That belongs to the imperialists. They don't talk about the weapons of imperialism that are dominant and that have been given to the Israeli puppet state for decades. $100 billion worth of it. $3 billion every year since 1967. No discussion. That's not discussed. Only the weapons of the liberation fighters are discussed, as though it's some kind of violation for Hezbollah to take weapons from Iran, but it's not a violation for the Zionists to take weapons from the Pentagon. That's okay. That's legitimate. And this is what's being churned out every day in the media. And we need to expose it to everybody we see, every worker that we meet. We should bring this up about the weapons of imperialism and the atrocities and this idea of self-defense and trying to make this somehow equal between Hezbollah and the Zionists and the U.S. But we have limited time tonight because of the tremendous presentation of the comrade from Cuba, which was so inspiring. But we do want to go over some of the basic perspective on this war. This war can only be understood as an expansion of the U.S. imperialist war in the Middle East. There's no other way to understand it. Now, it just so happens that the Israeli state has the same interests as the U.S. imperialists in trying to crush Hezbollah and in trying to crush Hamas. Their interests coincide. But that's not the decisive factor, the Israelis. See, sometimes the Israeli government, in its stubborn determination to hold on to its settler state and to push back the liberation forces, gets out of line and does something and takes the initiative, which U.S. imperialism is not for, but they'll go along with it. They'll go along with it. They'll accede to it. Now, as you watch this war progress, you ask yourself at first, well, are the Israelis taking the initiative and the U.S. is just acceding to it? But then you see, from the beginning, at the G8 conference in St. Petersburg, at the United Nations, and in every international forum, U.S. imperialism is blocking the ceasefire. This is not just the U.S. agreeing to something that the Israelis decided to do. This is planned between U.S. imperialism and Tel Aviv. And nobody should make a mistake about this. They are bogged down in Iraq. They are having a very difficult time in Iraq. And their answer to this is to try to gain a victory in Lebanon and in Palestine. That's their answer to it. To try to bolster this effort. And they think, well, we've got this puppets. They're not exactly puppets. They're clients of them. They're creatures of imperialism. We've got them. Let's turn them loose. Let's turn them loose. And it's part of a strategic approach. The struggle against Hamas is a continuation of the struggle against the Palestinians, which was given a great push forward by Bush when he gave Ariel Sharon permission to go in and try to destroy the Palestinian Authority and take Yasser Arafat prisoner in Ramallah and shell his compound and attack all the Palestinian police and all the budding authority of the Palestinian people that was beginning to be established. And the Bush administration said to Sharon, go ahead, get him. And they did. And they crushed Fatah, they pushed Fatah back, and they created a new moderate, not pro-imperialist, but collaboration with imperialism leadership in Fatah after destroying the Palestinian Authority as a budding authority. But Hamas rose because the resistance continued and Hamas expanded because it was resolute. And this is a continuation of the struggle that began in around 2000, after 2000, when Bush told Sharon to destroy the Palestinian Authority. And the struggle in Lebanon is the same continuation of the struggle that began when imperialism tried to push the Syrian troops out of Lebanon, framed up the Syrian government with the assassination of, say his name? Hariri, a billionaire, probably connected with the Saudis, probably killed by Mossad. But in any case, they framed him up and caused the so-called Cedar Revolution and push the Syrians out. The U.S. Congress passed a law saying that that Syria should be sanctioned if it didn't get out, and then the U.S. and sponsored a resolution in the UN Security Council saying, resolution 1559, infamous resolution, saying that Syria has to withdraw from Lebanon and Hezbollah has to be disarmed. That's in a UN resolution sponsored by the US. Passed, by the way. So there was their strategy in Iraq, in Lebanon, and this is the implementation of that strategy using the Israeli forces. And it's completely consistent with the historical role of Israel in relation to the United States, beginning in 1948, but especially in 1967, when Israel was used to destroy the rising nationalist developments in the Middle East, anti-imperialist developments, especially in Syria, when the left wing of the Ba'ath Party came to power, and the Israelis were used to strike and push it back, and that's when they annexed all the territory, the West Bank and Gaza, the Golan Heights, and so on. So this is consistent, this relationship. It's also meant as a warning to Iraq and to Iran and Syria. It's pointing, see, it's pointing. We can strike. Congress, both the Senate and the House of Representatives in the United States, passed overwhelming resolutions supporting the new offensive by the Israelis and demanding the prisoners to come back and etc., etc., etc. These are parties that can't unite and fight each other, the Republicans and Democrats, all year long. But when it comes to defending this Israel against the Arab peoples and the peoples of the Middle East, they are unified. The House passed it 410-8. And most of the eight people who disagreed were Lebanese Americans who happened to be in Congress. And the Senate passed it overwhelmingly too. The special relationship to Israel that they all talk about is really our special relationship to oil. That's the special relationship. It's to oil and oil profits and the oil companies and the Pentagon. And Israel, the Israeli state, is the defender of the interests of the oil companies in the Middle East. And that's where the special relationship lies. But I would just, in the short time we have, like to deal with some of the political issues connected to this war that are likely to arise in the course of the struggle and in the movement politically, so we need to make our position clear on these issues, and so forth. The first one, it all sort of comes out of the Kofi Annan presentation that he made to the United Nations on this issue, where he condemned Hezbollah for causing it, and condemned the Israelis for using disproportionate force, and called for a ceasefire, and called on Hezbollah, of course, to release their prisoners. Now, on the question of disproportionate use of force, how does a Marxist understand that question? You have to examine the class forces that are in conflict. On the one hand, you have Hezbollah and the Lebanese national resistance fighting against imperialism and its Zionist vanguard. There is no such thing as proportionate force that's correct. We grant the oppressor no right to use any force against any oppressed people. Any force is disproportionate. If a cop comes up to a black person on the street and beats them half to death, we don't say, well, only beat them one quarter to death. We go after the cops. A cop should never be able to lay a hand on anybody, any worker, or any poor person, or any oppressed person. And in the same sense, there is no legitimate force that's recognized by communist and oppressed people fighting for their liberation. So the idea of disproportionate force means that some measure of force is proportionate, and we reject that completely, and we should stand on that issue. Secondly, the question of who started this. Oh, didn't Hezbollah go over the border and seize these soldiers? And after that, of course, we had to destroy Lebanon, obviously, right? That's the right answer, right? You have to go in and bomb the airport and do all, and bomb every road and every bridge in the country and every village, of course. But from a communist point of view, it's not a question of who started it. You could say the Cubans invaded Moncada Garrison. That was an act of aggression. They started it. Well, it's a question of who is the oppressed and who are the oppressors. That's the issue. Sometimes the working class and the oppressed people have to take the initiative to gain an objective. And if they take that initiative, maybe it's well calculated, maybe it's not so well calculated. But they have a right to take the initiative. That's not the issue of whether they started it or not. And while we're talking about who started it, let's go back to 1948. That's where it started, when the settlers in the service of imperialism expelled the Palestinians and planted themselves on Palestinian soil and drove the masses out into the refugee camps where they reside now 50 years later. 60 years later, three generations have grown up in refugee camps. That's where it started. That's the root cause of this. And until it's overturned, there will be no peace and stability in the Middle East. On the question of a ceasefire, well, we want to condemn U.S. imperialism for going everywhere and strong-arming everybody to prevent a ceasefire. They are doing it because the Israeli offensive is on the ascendancy. It's moving forward. And they want to see what they can do in terms of destruction. And they don't want anything to interfere with it. So we want to condemn them for trying to protect the Israeli offensive against what they consider to be premature interference. On the other hand, the question of a ceasefire is something for the Hezbollah and the Hamas to determine as to when and what conditions they want a ceasefire. It's not our business to advocate, or anybody in the political movement here, to advocate a ceasefire, except under the conditions that Hezbollah or Hamas agrees to. Now, the Hezbollah leaders have already rejected Kofi Annan's call for a ceasefire in the terms that he put it. They said the only way this can be resolved is with a prisoner exchange, our prisoners for their prisoners. That's the conditions. They reject the ceasefire. Sometimes a ceasefire in a conflict benefits the imperialists or the bosses, and sometimes it benefits the oppressed and the workers. It's not an abstract question. When the Hezbollah forces and the forces of national liberation decide to call for a ceasefire, we will support them. As insofar as it seems like it flows from their struggle and the necessities of the struggle. So we are condemning imperialism and exposing them for obstructing a ceasefire, but that doesn't mean we are calling for a ceasefire. That's not our business. That's the business of Hezbollah and Hamas to decide when they want to have a call for a ceasefire and under what conditions. And then we will examine it. I want to just touch on something about the horrendous cry, human cry, about this being a war between Islam and Western civilization, because this is poisoning the atmosphere. This is poisoning the atmosphere. Islamic this and Islamic extremism and so on. First, we want to take a historical quick look back. Right now, many, many hundreds of thousands and perhaps millions of fighters and militants are being mobilized in the oppressed world around one or another form of Islamic ideology, a religion. It wasn't that way after the, in during the beginning of the anti-colonial struggle that opened up after World War II. It wasn't that way. There were communists and revolutionary bourgeois nationalists, but especially communists, who were part and parcel of the liberation movement. Mao Zedong was, after all, he was a liberation fighter to liberate China, but he was a communist. Ho Chi Minh was a communist. Fidel and Che turned out to be great communists, you know. But it was communism in the Middle East. The Iraqi Communist Party was a very powerful institution and the most mobilized, most strongest institution in Iraq of the working class. The Communist Party in Indonesia was in the millions. In Lebanon, the Lebanese Communist Party was strong. Very strong, especially among the oil workers. The U.S. imperialists and their agents spent four decades wiping out Marxism and Marxists, exterminating them from Jakarta all the way to Kabul in Afghanistan. All across the region. Why? Because it was the southern tier of the socialist camp of the USSR and China. It was the frontier on which the class struggle was being fought intensely and where socialism could take root, and the imperialists had a massacre in Indonesia in 1965 where they killed 500,000 to 1 million people, the communists. And they did everything in Egypt to subvert the communists. And they did everything in Iraq to exterminate the Communist Party of Iraq. They fought Marxism everywhere. And of course, the final chapter was the Afghanistan struggle, where the fundamentalists were utilized by the U.S. in the biggest CIA operation in the history of the United States to wipe out the Afghanistan revolution and the communist elements there, which organized Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Pakistan, under the orchestration of the CIA. But having wiped out Marxism or pushed it way back so that it was no longer a factor in the struggle, it did not eliminate oppression or exploitation. And the masses in these oppressed areas must fight. And they need some ideological framework within which to carry on their struggle. And Islam came, for various reasons in various places, became that ideological form under which oppressed peoples in the region, many of them, took up arms against imperialism. I mean, and it's gaining more and more. Especially because the bourgeois nationalists failed in Egypt, in Algeria, right? All along the line, the great bourgeois liberation movements, the Algerian Revolution, the Iraqi Revolution, the Egyptian Revolution, yeah. They were not able to solve the problems of the masses because they still had capitalist private property, and on that basis, they had to become absorbed into the world capitalist system and be subjected to neocolonialism and the parasitism of the Western imperialist banks and corporations, and they became, like in Egypt now, or they became subservient, and they lost the initiative. The communists were destroyed, so the Islamic forces asserted themselves. Now that's just the way it is. And we in the West, in here in the United States, we have to understand that this is the way the class forces are shaped up for the time being. And it's not a question of religion, because you've got the U.S. trying to work with the Saudi monarchy, which is a religious Islamist monarchy. It's a strict Islamic reactionary feudal bourgeois country and ruling class. They're religious. They're Islamic. But they're completely with imperialism. The same thing with the Kuwaiti monarchy. They're with imperialism. The same thing with the Jordanian monarchy. Sunnis. They're all Sunnis. They're with imperialism. But then there's the Hamas, which are Sunnis. But they're against imperialism. It's who's fighting imperialism and who's not. That's the issue. We supported the Iranian Revolution when Khomeini was fighting the Shah and threw the U.S. imperialists out. We didn't agree with his political ideology, and we don't agree with the ideology of Hezbollah or Hamas. We're communists. We're materialists. We don't believe in the Quran any more than we believe in the Bible. But that's not the point. When there's a struggle, we have to choose sides, our camp or the enemy camp. And that's how we have to look at this. And all of this stuff about Islamic propaganda, racist, chauvinist propaganda. First of all, they lump everybody Islamic together. Islam is a world religion. It has 1,300,000,000 people who practice it. It's as varied as anything. And there are different interpretations and different denominations and different practices and different doctrinal emphases. And only chauvinists talk about Islam. That's not the way. It's not. It's a people. Islam happens to be a religion that is prevalent in the oppressed world. That's the point. Christianity happens to be the religion that is prevalent in the imperialist world. That's just historical development. It's not Christianity versus Islam. It's capitalist imperialism against oppressed people and exploited people. That's and we have to stand on that and point it out. That look, the Shiite collaborators with the U.S. in Iraq, they're Shiites. But so Hezbollah is Shiite. They won't collaborate with imperialism or Zionism for one minute. It's the class forces. All right. Just finally, Chris. This war was calculated by imperialism in pretty much the same way they calculated the Iraq War. The neocons told Bush and Cheney, really I think Bush and Cheney used them. They were the used, and Bush and Cheney were the users. But they developed a doctrine of going into Iraq and it's going to be a piece of cake. And it was going to be met with flowers. And it was going to be a cakewalk, and you've all heard this before. And then they went in with shock and awe, and then they had to go in with an invasion, and then they went in with an occupation. And they ran into the resistance of the Iraqi people, who did not go along with the idea that they were going to just be enslaved. Now the Zionist military probably told the Pentagon and the Bush administration, you just give us a chance, you turn us loose, and we are going to turn the situation around. And they have an objective, two objectives. One is to destroy Hezbollah and the National Resistance Movement as a force in Lebanon. And secondly, to establish a regime in Beirut that will be loyal to imperialism and will have authority over the whole country and be able probably to guard the Syrian border, to protect the Israelis from anything on the south, and establish the, quote, sovereignty of some form of puppet government. That was their objective. And both of them, the Israelis and the U.S., the Israeli government and the U.S. government, repeat this over and over. They say this war can't end until, because unless we get beyond where we were, we're not going back to the way it was, meaning we're not going to finish this war until Hezbollah is destroyed and we put a puppet government in authority in Lebanon. And this is the same kind of thinking that led them into the quagmire in Iraq. The same thinking. It's the same miscalculation of the mass of the people who are decisive in the struggle. Now, part of their calculation, a very important part of their calculation, was that we're going to create a civil war in Lebanon. They were going to revive the civil war that was from 1982 on. They were going to revive it. They were going to take advantage of saying that Hezbollah caused this, and they were going to pummel Lebanon and drive a wedge between Hezbollah and the rest of the population and also in the Middle East, saying, you see, they did this to you. Be with us. The exact opposite happened. The government in Lebanon, the official government, was put in basically by the U.S. after the Syrians were driven out. And when this war broke out, the first thing that Bush said was, the Israelis, they could do whatever they're going to do, but don't upset the government of Senor, that's his name, Fahoud Senor. the Prime Minister. Don't upset that government. That was because this is their man, they thought. Now, after the aggression, as you all probably know, both the President and the Prime Minister of Lebanon have said, we will rather fight on the side of Hezbollah against Israeli intervention on the border if they come over the border. Now that's the exact, this is the kind of thinking that got them into Iraq. The Israelis had targeted, they had planned targets for 5 or 6 years since they were driven out in 2000. And they had all of these targets ready, and they bombed them and bombed them and bombed them. They flew several thousand sorties, and they claimed to have hit over 1,000 targets. Is that right, Michael? And it didn't, instead of intimidating the population, it drove them together. The Amal militia has said that they will fight with Hezbollah if the Israelis come over the border. And you can listen to the interviews with the refugees going across into Syria. I saw an interview with a woman who had two children, a tall woman in her maybe 40s, a very striking woman, who had her two children with her. And they are going across the border, and they interviewed her. And they said to her, well, you know, what are your plans? She said, well, I want you to know I'm not running. I'm leaving to protect my children. And when they grow up, I'm going to send them back to Lebanon to fight the Israelis. She told that to the interviewer. And if you think she's the only one, you multiply that by many, many tens of thousands of people who have been subjected to this. So that this movement, this national resistance movement, whatever happens in any immediate military sense right now, it can't be exterminated. It's deeply rooted in the Lebanese masses, and now it's more deeply rooted. It's more deeply rooted. So we have to have a revolutionary defense of Hezbollah. I haven't talked about Hamas, but everything we say about Hezbollah also applies. And we have to understand that the limited objectives of imperialism, we don't know how limited they are. I'm struck by the mildness of the Bush administration in its comments on Syria and Iran. It's mild compared to what it could be. At first, in the beginning, they started to talk about, well, what if Hezbollah blows up something in New York or in the United States? Remember that? That was like a couple of days ago. Is Hezbollah going to bring the war to the United States? That was on the TV. But they may do that, I don't know. But in a general way, they could be saying, Iranian weapons, Syrian weapons. Look at the ship. That was a Chinese missile adapted by the Iranians, shipped across the Syrian border to Hezbollah, and they attacked an Israeli warship. They could make a huge thing out of this, that it's an Iranian thing in Syria. They could make a huge thing. And then they could start running over and over pictures of when Hezbollah blew up the barracks and killed the Marines, 241 Marines. And they could blame that on Syria, on Iran. There's many, many things they're not saying, given their hostility and irreconcilable determination to get rid of the Iranian government. It means that for the moment, they are trying to give the impression that they have limited objectives, that it's limited to Lebanon. But it may not be that way, and it could quickly change if they get bogged down and are facing a big setback. And we have to just be aware of it and be on, have our ears out to listen for what they're saying, to see what direction they're going in at any given moment, so that we can be prepared for the struggle. So I just want to close by saying that they met the resistance that they never thought they were going to get. The fact that they're mobilizing on the border, it's a dangerous mobilization. It's a dangerous mobilization. But somebody said, the Israelis going back into South Lebanon is like the United States going back to Vietnam. They were driven out 6 years ago when the Hezbollah was far inferior in its organization and weaponry. They were driven out then. The resistance forces have improved their situation immeasurably since 2000 when they drove them out. We can't make any predictions. We don't know what's going to happen. But the fact that they have to make this invasion after all of that bombing, and they've been in all of the skirmishes on the border with the special forces, these Israeli forces, and all the casualties that they took, and the tanks that were destroyed on the border, it shows that it's not going well for them. And that they have to escalate. The fact that they have to escalate it is sort of an indication of a critical situation for U.S. imperialism and the Zionist state. So we want to go and do everything we can. There's going to be demonstrations called constantly on this, and we have to take the initiative and also join with all forces who are resisting U.S. Israeli aggression and explain to the movement over and over again that it's U.S. imperialism, not just Israel. It's U.S. imperialism is behind it. That's our enemy, and we have to fight them. And victory to Hezbollah, victory to Hamas, U.S. out of the Middle East.